The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace.
Enroll Alabama is a project of AIDS Alabama. For more information, visit the website AIDSAlabama.org. Welcome to another episode of the Healthy Alabama podcast, sponsored by Enroll Alabama and produced in partnership with Oakwood University Radio, Praise 90.1 FM WJOU. I'm David Person, and we're back with my longtime childhood friend, Dr. Lilith Graham White, and she was telling her powerful story in the last episode of the podcast about her own challenges in her marriage that culminated with a domestic abuse situation and divorce. And we're going to just pick right back up with that. Lilith, welcome back to the podcast.
Yes, well, okay, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. And so let's try to pick up where we left off. You were talking about, if I remember correctly, you were talking about the justice system and what you were having to go through in order to address what happened in your home. You also talked about some of the impact that this had on you and your daughters, mm-hmm. Homelessness, and financial challenges mm-hmm. and other things.
So, just to be more positive this time, just want to give you some snippets of the journey that were just powerful and allowed me to recollect and see God's hand by allowing me to go through this test, how he just tried to develop certain character traits in me that were powerful and also things that I needed to develop to get where I want to be in terms of doing some more things with the clinic and what I want to do in terms of my vision with women and families. But when my girls were compelled to go to school the day that their father had, you know, they witnessed the father trying to strangle me and getting arrested. And we had never had this scenario. So even when let me just go back and kind of go through that one more time, because when the phone got knocked out of my hand, I knew that the trace was on. So I didn't fear at all. I knew they were tracing the call. When I said that I was in a life-threatening situation, they were going to be there immediately. Because my husband at the time was inebriated, he really was just trying to come to his senses and see what had gone on. But I saw him immediately go to the bedroom and try to camouflage the whole event, put on a nice shirt and look like I'm delirious and crazy about nothing. But at that time, when he went there, I went to check on the girls and saw that they were okay. The security guards for the apartment, because we had transitioned from our home, and that's another story. We bought a 60-acre property. We were going to move out there and do a quote-quote mission. But I was hoping that, you know, there would be nothing life-threatening for me out there. So we were in an apartment because we had sold our home and we were transitioning and trying to sell my practice and go straight there. So anyway, the security guards for the apartment complex came up and they said there was a lot of noise. They came to see what was going on. But they made doubtful comments about the whole incident once I described it to them. And they said, well, we don't see anything on your neck. And I didn't think to show them my back. Like I mentioned last interview, I had seen scratches down my back that let me know there was some struggles that I didn't even feel. You know, I guess my husband was trying to grasp my neck from a more wide dimension. I had no idea what was going on. But anyway, the security guards came in, so they said, well, this sounds kind of funny, you know, we don't see any marks on your back. And then just as they were saying that and sounded like they were going to discount everything and leave, the APD came in, and I was so happy for Atlanta Police Department. He came right to me, bypassed everybody, and said, look, listen, were you the one to call? I said, yes. He said, did you feel threatened in any way? I said, yes. And my husband tried to interject at the time and say, all I did was place my hands on her shoulders, and I just tried to ask her about this gentleman she had been seeing. And I'm like, what is he talking about?
Wow.
He's trying to stage this whole event. It's like it was an event of infidelity.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, oh, my goodness. So I just sat there and just tried not to react. And the policeman just said, look, did you feel threatened? I said, yeah. He said, well, we're going to handcuff. Do you want him? You know, he said, first of all, I need to have another witness that was here present to verify and validate everything. And my sister had been visiting from Chicago, and I was just kind of shocked because she didn't chime in right away. She kind of looked down and wanted to appear like she was invisible. And I'm looking at her like, we need somebody to say something. And the girls were not really candidates because they would be turning their dad in, and they didn't want to be in that position. So I looked at her, and I knew she was a little fearful to get involved, but she finally, you know, said yes and validated the story that I told. So they looked at me at that point, and they said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I want to pray first. And they looked at me like, are you crazy? The security guards and the policemen, they were like, we don't pray about anything. Look, one way or the other, we're either leaving or we're going to arrest. So I just said, okay, arrest him. So when they took him out, I immediately prayed with the girls, told the girls I forgave their dad. Interestingly enough, the way God orchestrates
now,
everything.
May I for a second? You forgave their dad already?
Already.
Let How me does explain that, work? That.
Well, God orchestrates everything perfectly. I went to a seminar on forgiveness with a women's ministry group about a month before. So it was like God was preparing me for this test. And, you know, acknowledged that forgiveness is not for the recipient or the, you know, the one that's done wrong, but for the one that's been wronged. So I immediately wanted to do the right thing because I was trying to be the perfect Patty, perfect Christian. So I just told them, I said, guys, we have to forgive Daddy. In fact, we're going to pray for him. We're going to pray for you all that you have a good day at school. And this doesn't just get you upset in any way where you can't focus academically.
But did you feel forgiveness inside?
You know, because of the seminar, I just thought, this guy is really pathetic with how he's allowed these substances to take him over completely. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I did.
Okay.
It wasn't until later that I realized it's a repeated thing. It's not a one-time thing. That's where it became challenging. Mm-hmm. Because when people repeatedly do you wrong and they know they're doing you wrong, then right. It's more challenging to say, okay, I'm going to keep forgiving you. You kind of tell them the first time, okay, I'm going to forgive you. But it better not happen again. And I knew it wasn't going to happen again at that point because I was going to separate. I had no idea I was going to divorce, but I was just planning to separate, let him get some rehab and see what we could iron out with counseling until other things were discovered. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when they went to school that day, the powerful snippet that I wanted to share is what I call the ministry of the wounded healer. When my daughter went to school, the oldest one, she, you know, went to the restroom before first period, and she saw one of her peers in there, and she was crying uncontrollably. And she asked her, why are you crying? And her friend just immediately told her, I saw my mother and father fighting this morning, and my father pushed my mother down the stairs. Immediately.
Oh, wow.
My daughter was able to say, don't worry. She hugged her. She said, my mom and dad were fighting this morning, too, and my dad almost killed my mom.
Oh, wow.
They embraced. Mm, mm, mm. They cried. They empowered and inspired each other. Mm. I mean, what more therapy could you get than a peer who could empathize, not a counselor who's out of your circle and probably has never been through anything that you're expressing, so you don't know if they are able to even understand you, mm-hmm. but a peer go through what you went through and inspire and empower you. I said, God, look at you. You are so amazing. I prayed that you would take care of my daughters in this, you know, very busy day with no time to breathe because I was already off schedule with everything that had happened that morning and trying to get to the office and see 30 patients and do a C-section later. And now I have to be responsible to pick them up because their dad can't pick them up because he's in jail. So with all of that, God, before I even called, he answered. There's a verse in the Bible, Isaiah 65:24, says, before you call, I will answer. Even while you're praying, I've already heard you. So I just felt so empowered learning that later when she shared it with me. I said, wow, God took care of her. And she was fine. She was, by that experience, she was like, I'm not alone. A lot of times we suffer with situations and issues because we feel we're alone. We feel that we're the only one. When we realize that, you know, that it's universal and that we're not the only ones going through things, we feel a lot better. But that was a powerful snippet in the journey that I wanted to share. And, you know, later on, as I was saying, we had challenges just getting a new residence. So we initially had to do hotel hopping. We weren't an extended stay hotel, so we couldn't stay longer than a week. And then with the concierge giving us the information of a gentleman saying that I was trying to kidnap the kids and show pictures, we knew we had to kind of move along too when, you know, they, when he was able to find us. We had to stay away from the scene of the church at initially because we knew that he would probably be up at the church and would follow us home. And so we didn't want that. And if you remember my interview last time, I told you I had done some training with domestic violence.
Yeah, when you were in medical school, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, in residency.
Residency.
And okay. So the one important and crucial thing not to do, this the biggest no-no, if you want to save your life, because if we go back and look at news stories where there were homicide, suicides, or just a shooting, and it was a domestic issue or a boyfriend, girlfriend issue, significant other issue, the person that was running and trying to get free made the mistake of not telling the circle of friends or family that they left that person and that person was dangerous. So if you're listening, hear this and hear it closely. If you don't tell anybody you're in danger, then just logically, if that person says, hey, have you seen such and such? They're going to tell them where you are, but you're trying to escape. And that one piece of information can either cause your life to be lost or saved.
That's a great point. That's a great point. So you can't keep secrets.
No.
You really have to divulge.
In fact, you have to empower yourself. Mm-hmm. By exposing the predator. It's so sad. You don't want to do it,
right?
But to save lives, you have to do it.
Well, I would imagine that a lot of victims of abuse feel shame. And so the shame.
Oh, yes.
And then some may even feel guilt. You know, they may feel that they've contributed in some way to what's happened to them. And so they are then reluctant to share.
Right.
But in fact, you should do the opposite, as you're saying.
Right.
You should share for your own protection and the protection of your family.
Now, let me qualify the statement. Only if you have a way out. If you don't, you don't need to share right away because you could cause yourself harm going back to the same environment.
Because
the environment's toxic.
Right, right.
And that's
going
to escalate things.
Right.
So you want to do that once you have a plan out of the toxic environment.
But you do have to, but I would also argue, and I've talked to my friends at Asha Kieran and also Crisis Services of North Alabama quite a bit through the years, and I would argue that while you may not want to necessarily share it with everybody in your circle, you do need to. You're going to have to talk. You're going to have to confide in somebody in order to get the plan rolling to get out.
Absolutely. You
know?
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
You have to have some kind of plan in place. It may not be the full exposure yet where family and friends are aware, but if you've made contact with these organizations that can help and you can do it underhandedly where you don't put yourself in harm's way, you can start doing it.
Right. And you do have to be... Obviously, you have to be strategic about that.
Right.
Yeah. So when did you start to really see the turnaround in your life in terms of, okay, so this has been a dark moment, very dark moment for you and your daughters. And so when did you begin to see things really turn around and become better?
Okay. Well, before I say that, I just want to quickly skim by the fact that initially when we had to get out and we did the hotel hopping and we finally found a place that was dog friendly, we got into a condo. We were only able to do that for about a year and a half because this ordeal dealt with more than just a domestic issue. It was actually an identity theft issue. It involved my practice. I found that my reimbursements were being rerouted elsewhere. It's just really a lot of information. Like I said, look for the book. So with all the other things that were involved, like a house for me somewhere else under my name, another post office box in another state, as if I had another practice in another state, and was receiving other reimbursements from the work I was doing, and I was losing money. After a year and a half and kind of just exhausting all my funds, savings account, 401k, everything down to zero, and trying to keep the payroll system, able to pay my employees. I decided, I said, God, you must want me to close the doors right now, just take a hiatus. And I know that that's what he wanted, because it happened on the very date that the strangled event happened on, but just the next year. So it was April something, I think April 26th. Mm. It happened on that date of the next year.
Okay.
So we got evicted from the practice. We left out. I decided to homeschool because somebody provided another office setting I could have chosen to do. And I just said, no, I hear from God just to close down, do the homeschool, and just get in the secret place of the Lord. When I got in the secret place of the Lord, other discoveries were made. They were mind-blowing. Like I said, it was a five-tier storm. So I saw that, identity theft was going on. And as we're seeing now with Equifax, a lot of things were hacked even back then before the discoveries were made now in 2016 and 17. This was back in 2012. I saw how things were hacked because my score was super when my name was spelled incorrectly. And then it was just mediocre when it was spelled the right way. So incorrectly, it was great. Correctly, it was mediocre. They had done so much identity theft, they had weakened and tainted my credit profile. So I just wanted to say that so that we could see how things are in terms of turning around. Because from this kind of devastation, it wasn't going to be an overnight turnaround. It's actually a gradual one. And like I told the girls, once we had gotten residentially challenged or homeless on the residential end, not just, evicted from the practice, and car repossession, just everything that could happened to us, we actually were able to say, we can't go any lower. So God, we know the next step is going to have to be up, because there's nowhere else lower to go. Mm. We have been through quite a bit. And I remember my mother saying, oh, I just feel so terrible that the girls have to go through this. And I said, well, Mom, you're not God. And she didn't understand what I meant. I said, God doesn't give us anything he hasn't tested first before he puts it on us, allows it to happen, rather. We know he doesn't do it. We know Satan does, but he doesn't allow anything that he doesn't think that we can handle with him. So I just told her, I said, this is a test that is just a boot camp for the greater that we're about to get into. So, I accept the challenge. The girls are we actually realized that even in those hotel excursions, we got up close and personal time that we didn't have before, just from literally close quarters, other than being in a house. And we were able to be together, talk, form some camaraderie in the vulnerable situation we were in. So it was, we see how God has an interesting way of answering prayers through trials and tribulations. I wanted the girls to be more spiritually strong. I wanted them to have their own individual relationship. Well, they were super empowered when they saw their mother come out of that strangulation situation. They knew there was nothing but God. When they prayed and let their little prayers go up and their God delivered their mom and delivered them, they knew there's a God. And so prayers were being answered and all that. So things started turning around, to answer your question, like maybe after 3 or 4 years. And interestingly enough, I made sure that even with the temporary protective order, I tried to be Christ-like in everything I did. So I got their father visitation, but it was under supervision. There's a place called Nia's Place in Decatur, Georgia. And it looks very warm and safe and just, fun loving, but it's actually very well federally secured. So what happens is when the mother or whoever, the father, whoever the victim is with the kids, brings the children to the appointment, there's one building that the guardian of the children go to. The door locks and someone comes, gets the children, but you're locked safely in the building just in case your predator has somebody else out to get you. And then the children are escorted over to the next building over, which is a house that has 3 levels. And it's really fun. You watch movies. They have depending on your kids' ages, they have the atmosphere set to be comfortable for the visitation, yes, for an hour. Mm-hmm. And it's videoed, it's supervised, they have tapings. And they were able to do that once or twice a week. So okay, we made sure he got to see, you know, the children, and they got to see him, and they told him they were praying for him. But I wanted to not only mention that to let you know, we were definitely praying for his deliverance and all this too, and his help and, you know, restoration to himself. Mm-hmm.
Couple of quick things before we run out of time. One is, it was obviously very important to you for your daughters to continue to have a relationship with their father, even though they had watched their father,
yeah,
you know, according to your story, they watched their father try to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So why was it important to you that they continue to have a relationship with him?
Well, I've always told my children, the way I believe, I'm Seventh-day Adventist, but I don't try to wear the denominational name. I wear the doctrine name, like getting in the Word. We believe the entire Word from Genesis to Revelation. And when you read the Bible, you are aware of these outside forces that are evil and some are good. So I explained to them, this, your dad is just under the wrong force. He's, you know, so that they would not look at him as a villain, but look at him as somebody that is actually a victim to these outside forces, and that he needs prayer too. So by looking at it with that mindset and having that, you know, thought process going on with myself and with the girls, we were able to take any feelings of anger or hatred or resentment away from him and direct it to the real enemy behind everything, the one that comes to steal, kill, and destroy, that we know is the devil. So,
mm-hmm,
so I just told them that part of his healing is them loving him unconditionally.
Wow, wow. So that leads to the other part of, or the other question I was going to ask you before we run out of time, and that is your faith. I mean, this conversation, you know, we do a lot of interviews on this podcast that have nothing to do with religion,
mm-hmm,
at all. Or personal
and
faith.
I wasn't trying to make it that.
No, no,
it just
no,
came
no,
out.
No,
I'm
no,
so sorry.
No. I'm not asking you to apologize. I mean, this is your story.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And I mean, of course, our media partner is a religious radio station.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a problem. But I'm just saying, we do a lot of interviews where religion does not come into play. So to have an interview, you know, over the course of two episodes with you, where religion is such a, and I say religion, it's really not even religion. It's your personal faith,
mm-hmm,
in God,
mm-hmm,
is such a major part of this whole story.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask you, how were you able to, in light of the fact that you that your life took this dramatic, I'm going to say downturn.
Yeah.
You know, because not only was your life, you know, in jeopardy, your marriage caused
destroyed,
the ending of your,
yeah,
marriage. Your children were affected. Your relationship with your stepchildren was affected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your practice was affected.
Mm-hmm. My livelihood, my career,
yeah, everything,
my integrity,
everything.
They lied on me.
So
yeah,
how were you able to maintain a faith in God when everything around you was crashing?
Yeah, well, you know, I know the big picture, and that's the thing that really solidifies that question. Because first and foremost, I have to realize that my Savior, your Savior, our Savior, he went through so much that I'll never even be able to even fathom, and let alone go through. And he was innocent and pure, and I'm not innocent and pure. So when I think about that, it gives me another mindset, and it makes me look to him, trust him implicitly. Even when I can't trace his heart, I just trust him, you know, regardless. I was going to say, too, that I realized that my devotion that morning before I had the strangling event was the Lord told me just to linger a little longer. Because like I put in my book, you know, sometimes I would fuel myself, you know, just like we do a cell phone. Sometimes we let it get to 30, 50, and then sometimes fully charged. That morning, the Lord said, you need to get fully charged. I will say transparently, I don't always have an optimal devotion, but I do have a daily devotion. And even though the Lord said, do it optimally, I know I wasn't all the way 100% charged, but I was charged and it made a difference. And I'm glad God met me where I was, because had I not had some spiritual, you know, kind of foundation to stand on, I would have lost my mind when I found out everything. Mm. There were some things I found out later with the comptroller. I actually called the comptroller, wrote a letter because I got some disturbing information once I...
comptroller of
the U.S. I called the comptroller, the Treasury of the U.S.
The U.S. Treasury.
I wrote, let me just explain. I know so much in this story and you'll see it in the book, but once I removed my husband from the practice, and then I had to remove some staff too. They may have been harassed by him. I don't know, but... everything that I was doing was being discovered by him because I saw the interference, and I was like, well, somebody had to know I was going to do that to interfere. So I just removed everybody from the practice while we were doing investigations, got a total new staff. And I saw mail that usually they would intercept and delegate out, you know, just let me see what I needed to see. I saw what they were doing, but they had it all traced to me. They had accounts that I knew nothing about. And that's how I discovered the house in Florida. But the after a while, I tried to call the bank involved, and they were very, very evasive. And I was like, I gave you the Social Security number because it was tied to my Social Security number, but this person that had my name was an alias. Later on, I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to write the comptroller. When I wrote them, they told me, if you don't get a response from this bank in so many days, they said, call us. I didn't have to put that phone down. I was getting a call from that bank. Hmm. And they told me everything. Mind blowing. This whole ordeal traced back to a medical school credit card that was lost when I was in medical school.
Wow.
Didn't even know my husband then.
There's obviously so much to this story that we have not even begun to touch. If people want to reach you, how can they reach you? What's the best way to reach you? You have an email address that you can share?
Yes. imageofeve@gmail.com.
Image of Eve, E-V-E, at gmail.com. My friend, my sister, Dr. Lalith Graham White, thank you so much for sharing your story, for being so candid, so transparent, and so relentlessly optimistic as you have shared your story. Thank you.
You're welcome. All God.
All right. The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, which is a part of AIDS Alabama. Our media partner is WJOU, 90.1 FM, Oakwood University Radio.
I want to say one more thing.
Okay.
Through this whole ordeal, every time I would do devotionals, the Lord would take me to Matthew 5:20.
Okay.
Please read that. It says, except your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will in no wise enter into heaven. So I realized that this test was coming because the Lord wanted to show me that the righteousness I thought I had, we already know it's filthy rags, any righteousness that any human being has, because we don't have any. But the Lord wanted to show me that whatever I thought was so righteous or religious, I had a long way to go. Okay. I had to realize that I have to be hit and burnt and betrayed and bamboozled and then still love to understand what real love is all about.
Wow. Okay. Very powerful thoughts. Dr. Lalith Graham White. The Healthy Alabama podcast is produced in partnership with WJOU 90.1 FM here in Huntsville, Alabama. And we are sponsored by Enroll Alabama, which is a project of AIDS Alabama. Our theme music was produced by DJ Bailey. And I'm David Person, host and producer. Until next time, be healthy.